I think there definitely is an argument to be made for the fact that Isabelle Huppert does bring authorship to the role, and that is why perhaps it has that kind of feminist angle. But at the same time, I think it is really complicated and not quite so clear as that. I mean, I would say, for me, this film doesn't sit squarely as a feminist or non-feminist film. And in many ways, those labels aren't particularly helpful when we're trying to think about the experience of rape and how that affects different people and how that affects a lot of women. You know, this particular character has one particular response to it. That's not true or untrue. It is the truth for someone. There is definitely something to be said for the fact that there is this dissociative kind of response to the rape from the character. And I think that that is something a lot of women experience, is that it's almost disembodied. And we see that in the, you know, opening scene with the camera kind of refusing to take part in some of it, almost as if, like, kind of you're sort of wandering onto something else, and you start to think about mundane details like clearing up the mess, as if that were a way of coping with the action that had just taken place. So it is more complicated than that.
That was Tara Judah discussing the strange, thrilling, and very tense new film, Elle. Isabelle Huppert may have scored an Oscar nomination, but that hasn't helped many people grasp just exactly what to make of this film. We'll hopefully get to the bottom of it all today on The Cinema Show. And believe it or not, that's not the strangest psychosexual drama in theatres this week.
I'm the Love Witch. I seduce men with my spells, my potions, my eyes, and my body.
We'll find out why The Love Witch might be the perfect film for this year's International Women's Day. That's all to come on The Cinema Show on Monocle 24.
Jerry died, the cops wouldn't stop harassing me. They couldn't prove anything. They actually thought that I killed him. Anyways, San Francisco got to be a really bad trip after you left. And that's when I remembered you had that extra apartment.
Sigmund Freud once remarked to his good friend Princess Marie Bonaparte that despite nearly 30 years of research, he'd never been able to answer what must have seemed like such a simple question. What do women want? This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. With a splash of Italian-style horror and 1970s soap opera, The Love Witch is a strange new film that has plenty to say.
What do men want?
Just a pretty woman to love and to take care of them.
Love me. Love me.
What I'm really interested in is love. You might say I'm addicted to love.
More on that later. But first, Elle.
Qu'est-ce que tu fous là, toi? Allez, rentre.
The opening scene of director Paul Verhoeven's new film, Elle, is shocking in every sense of the word. Isabelle Huppert, in the leading role of Michelle, is pinned to the floor of her kitchen. It's a rape scene, and we've entered about halfway through. Even the most seasoned moviegoers will find this uncomfortable viewing, but that's precisely the point. Like much of Verhoeven's work, Elle is cleverly dressed up in an outfit that, at least initially, distracts from what's really going on. Shortly after her attacker leaves, Michelle picks herself up off the floor, alarmed, obviously, relieved, probably, but traumatized, irreparably victimized, maybe not. Elle has been described by some as a rape revenge story. That's not only inaccurate, it also ignores the main thread of this story. Far from a social commentary of sexual assault, this is a film intent on flipping our assumptions and pointing them right back at us. What if a woman, when confronted with the horrific reality of her rapist's perversity, surprised everyone by revealing her own barely concealed desires? It's a simple premise taken to the absolute extreme by one of the few filmmakers brazen enough to approach such a topic. In any case, as Tara Judah recalls, no amount of prior knowledge of the work of Paul Verhoeven is likely to dull the impact of this eggshell walk of a film.
It was pretty surprising because I actually went into this film without having read anything about it, which is quite hard. You have to live under a rock for a while to make that happen. So I didn't pay attention to anything straight out of Cannes. I didn't want to know anything about the film until I saw it, aside from the fact that the two things I knew were, one, it's directed by Paul Verhoeven, and two, that it stars Isabelle Huppert. So that, in a sense, was kind of enough for me to, I think, be ready for it. But nothing really prepared me for the opening of this film, even though Paul Verhoeven's films all start with really shocking violent scenes. The violence of this scene particularly just completely shook me up. And I think I was really almost wrong-footed for the rest of the film. I didn't really know where I was supposed to position myself. I was glad that I had Isabelle Huppert because I feel like I kind of held on to that for the whole of the film. I held on to the fact that I trust this actress and I know that she's really intelligent and she doesn't take roles that she can't bring strength to. But I felt really uncomfortable the whole way through this film. It was a really strange cinema viewing. And when I came out of it immediately, I just needed to sit down again. I didn't want to go and watch another film. I didn't want to kind of, sometimes, you know, you come out of a film and you're bursting with energy. You want to talk about it or you're kind of feeling like, great, that was really interesting. I'm going to think about that on the way to my next film, particularly in a festival context. And this one just made everything else stop. I had so much to think about, and I've been thinking about it ever since I first saw it and still find it so complicated to come to a conclusion as to what my feelings are really kind of statically on this film. And I think in a way that's partially the merit of the film, but I also don't want to say that the film is just fantastic for being so exploitative and shocking.
A potentially troublesome aspect of Elle is that it's the work of three men, director Paul Verhoeven, screenwriter David Burke, and the author of the book upon which it's based, Philippe Jahn. But that hopefully won't distract from the many messages being conveyed here. Michelle is the kind of heroine we seem to very rarely see in films today. When she's not dealing with the aftermath of her attack, she spends much of her time tending to the insecurities of men. It's almost a throwback to the great noir melodramas of the 1940s. Mildred Pierce could easily exist in this world. The key to this, of course, is the uncanny talent of Isabelle Huppert.
There is also a third writer, I guess, or authorship to this film, which I think is Isabelle Huppert. And this is partially because her, you know, she's spoken about this in interviews working with Paul Verhoeven. She said that he let her respond. And I think we do get the sense that a lot of this is her actual response and her acting, and that maybe even though he's directing her, he hasn't directed her directly in all of these scenes, that some of that is really come from her. And I think she also brings to this role the history of her performances. And we think about her, some of the work she's done, particularly with Michael Haneke, really stoic and strong and terrifying roles in The Time of the Wolf, in also The Piano Teacher. She's played these types of women before. She's played strong and also perverse women. She's played really intriguing women, really melodramatic women. She has a whole history of cinema behind her at this point in her career. And for me, the nuances in the subtlety of her facial kind of responses to things almost carries the weight of some of those other characters too. So it's not just the one character from this film, which makes it really difficult to talk about because it's almost as if this film has such a kind of history of cinema before it, and it comes loaded with all of those references, references to her work, references to his work.
Let's talk about Paul Verhoeven's work then. It's easy to think of him in the context of a handful of films. Basic Instinct, Total Recall, and of course Showgirls. They all made an enormous impression on mainstream filmmaking for very different reasons. But Verhoeven's work on the screen actually began way back in 1971 with the Dutch comedy Business is Business. That film actually did quite bad business, but his 1973 feature, Turkish Delight, scored an Academy Award nomination for Best Foreign Language Film. Then Hollywood came knocking. his first American film was, perhaps, an interesting choice. Flesh and Blood is a dramatic adventure set in Italy in the 1500s. Verhoeven's script was partly based upon some old unused bits and pieces left lying around from a Dutch television series called Floris. But it was his next project, a violent dystopian future nightmare, that really set a new standard.
Your move, creep.
Set in a crime-infested Detroit in an indistinct future, RoboCop's blend of dark satire with graphic violence and a cynical commentary of corporate culture was the perfect antidote to America of the Reagan era. Screenwriter Edward Neumeier and Verhoeven himself both openly leaned to the political left, but that didn't stop many from missing the admittedly fairly obvious irony at play in RoboCop. Some saw the cultural worship of big corporates as akin to a fascist film. Few filmmakers managed to produce even one classic during their careers. Verhoeven made several, and three of them were made back-to-back.
Where am I?
You're in a Johnny Cab.
I mean, what am I doing here?
I'm sorry. Would you please rephrase the question?
Huh? How did I get in this taxi?
The door opened. You got in.
A short story by the legendary science fiction author Philip K. Dick provided the basis for the 1990 action thriller Total Recall. Arnold Schwarzenegger stars as an unassuming construction worker plagued by dreams of an alternate life on Mars. Despite being near the peak of his career during a time some might call the golden age of blockbuster action films, Schwarzenegger wasn't actually the first choice. The lead role was originally intended for Richard Dreyfuss, with Dino De Laurentiis attached as producer. But the box office failure of David Lynch's science fiction epic Dune in 1984 was keeping De Laurentiis awake at night. Schwarzenegger had already suggested himself for the leading role, but there was little interest. But then, De Laurentiis' production company collapsed, giving Schwarzenegger the chance he craved. Partnering with a production company, it was he who recruited Paul Verhoeven as director, and the film was a roaring success.
There's no smoking in this building, Miss Trammell.
What are you going to do? Charge me with smoking?
Verhoeven's next project needs little introduction. The release of Basic Instinct in 1992 ignited outrage and protests, and Sharon Stone's infamous leg-crossing scene was just the beginning.
Basic Instinct has the most paused moment in movie history. In all of movie history, it is the most paused
Conan,
moment.
What moment would that be?
It's towards the...
As with many Paul Verhoeven films, Basic Instinct attracted criticism for its depiction of sexuality and gender politics. Some took issue with its negative portrayal of homosexuality, while others simply thought it was far too violent. But the controversy only seemed to push more and more people into seeing it, until it eventually became one of the most successful films of the decade. His follow-up in 1995, however, struck an entirely different chord.
I say you did it for the spot.
Is that what you did, Crystal?
You don't want to piss me off, darling, now that we're friends.
No. You shouldn't get pissed off. It makes you look older.
Showgirls is one of the most famously bad movies of all time, an accolade for which Verhoeven often receives sole credit. But the trashy Las Vegas set soap opera was actually the brainchild of Basic Instinct screenwriter Joe Esterhaas. Verhoeven apparently told Esterhaas that he'd always wanted to make one of those big MGM-style musical spectacles. How that idea spawned Showgirls is anyone's guess.
She's not hot enough, Tone.
She's got it down.
You can teach him to get it down. She doesn't have Crystal's heat.
Yeah, well, none of them have Crystal's heat. I do love it.
Showgirls was the kind of epic disaster that only comes around every so often. Its failure was so severe that it was bound to ignite at least some morbid curiosity. With a budget of about $45 million, it brought in just $38 million. Star Kyle MacLachlan recalled his reaction upon seeing the film for the first time. "I was absolutely gobsmacked," he said. "This is horrible, horrible. And it's a very slow, sinking feeling when you're watching the movie and the first scene comes out and you're like, oh, that's a really bad scene. But then you say, well, that's okay, the next one will be better. And you somehow try to convince yourself that it's going to get better and it just gets worse. And I was like, wow, that was crazy. I mean, I really didn't see that coming. So at that point, I distanced myself from the movie." Despite its flop at the box office and Kyle MacLachlan disowning the film, it has more than made its budget back via home video, DVD, and of course now streaming sales, and it remains one of MGM's top-selling titles. One can only imagine what Louis B. Mayer might have made of that. Of course, Paul Verhoeven's career didn't end after Showgirls. He made Starship Troopers in 1997 and returned to the Netherlands in 2006 to make Black Book, voted by the Dutch public in 2008 as the nation's favourite film. We could also talk about Hollow Man in 2000, but, well, we won't. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. If your film watching habits are anything like mine, well, you're probably often presented with that series of watch next suggestions from the films featuring a strong female lead category. Well, in honor of International Women's Day, let's take a look at some standout leading ladies of the cinema, starting with one of my favorites, Giulietta Masina. The 1957 Italian film Knights of Cabiria by Federico Fellini is a heart-wrenching tale of one woman's endless search for love. Masina plays a sex worker in Rome who, after being treated terribly by various men, finally seems to have found happiness. Far from a pretty woman-style fairy tale, though, Knights of Cabiria is a story of tragedy that also somehow manages to be one of the most hopeful and life-affirming films that I've ever seen.
Get away from her, you bitch!
With such a long history of after-school adventures aimed at boys, the science fiction genre hasn't always been a friendly place for strong women. But Sigourney Weaver sent that assertion running for cover with her classic outing in 1979 with Alien. Far more recently, Sandra Bullock conquered the outer limits in 2013 with Gravity. We heard about the sensational Mae West on last week's show, but there's also Betty Davis, Barbara Stanwyck, Greta Garbo, Norma Shearer, and the director Ida Lupino. Cinema would be a very different beast without the countless women who have challenged the professional and societal expectations placed upon them. Then, of course, there's Agnès Varda, a driving force behind what became known as the French New Wave. Her groundbreaking style was a sensation for audiences of the 1950s. In 1961, she made Cleo from 5 to 7. On paper, it's a film about a pop singer waiting for the results of a biopsy. Dig a little deeper, however, and you'll find an immensely rich depiction of a woman confronting her mortality. Cleo from 5 to 7 is one of seven films playing as part of the women's series on Mubi here in the United Kingdom. In the US, subscribers can catch Agnès Varda's 1988 film, Le Petit Amour. Mubi is the curated movie site of cult, classic, and award-winning films. Sample a whole month for free right now. Just head over to mubi.com/monocle. That's MUBI/monocle. This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan, and Tara Judah is still here. Now, bear with us for a moment while we engage in a little black magic.
I dreamed of a fairy lady in a strange land. She captured the hearts of all the boys and men. She wore a gown of pink and purple roses. It was so tra-la-la and so...
were we? Oh, men. You said we need to give them what they want. Well, what do men want?
Just a pretty woman to love and to take care of them and to make them feel like a man and to give them total freedom in whatever they want to do or be.
Okay, so it centers around a character called Elaine. She is a very beautiful woman who has... things haven't quite worked out for her in San Francisco. She's on the road, starting a new life, and we get in the title credit sequence the kind of backstory of what happened to the husband she's left behind. And we find out that he's died, potentially at her hand. She is a Wiccan. She practices witchcraft, but she practices love witchcraft. So she casts love spells on men. Her desire is to fall in love. She moves to this new town, makes a new friend, Trish. They have a really interesting conversation about feminism and the patriarchy. And I think, you know, Trish kind of stands in as the voice of reason from the audience's perspective of this woman who seems to be determined to just give men whatever they want. You know, her outlook is that men just need a beautiful woman to look after them. That's what they're after, and that's what women should do. But ultimately, it's not the story of a submissive woman. You know, this is actually a feminist film that turns the genre on its head. So it has harking back to Hitchcock films, to Claude Chabrol's films, I think, Razor's Edge, Angel Face are films that Annabella, the director, has actually cited as influences. And not just stylistically. I mean, I think she borrows stylistically from those films, but she also takes the genre and flips it so that instead of this woman kind of encountering these men who put their projections onto her, which was the sort of stuff we might see in giallo films or typical kind of 70s horror and I guess these sort of romantic horror films, like if we think about Suspiria and other giallos like that.
One review referred to the colour scheme being a bit of a blend of the giallo cinema, the 1970s horror films coming from Italy, Dario Argento, we were speaking about on the cinema show just recently, but also some big, lush Hollywood melodramas as well. The pastel-infused Doris Day, bright, bubbly colours of the 50s style films too. Just looking at the trailer, I immediately think maybe this is what would have happened if Lana Del Rey had have starred in Bewitched. It is a very strange blend, but it's not all about the colour composition here, is it?
No, the colours are absolutely stunning. I mean, it's worth saying that Annabella, the director, is also the writer of her film. She makes everything that's in the shot, basically. She does the costumes, the sets, much of the artwork and the paintings that are on the wall, the props she makes. I mean, I think it took her something between 7 and 10 years to get this film finished. And a lot of that is because she makes all of the props and all of the things, like the rugs and the materials, before she actually shoots.
She's a one-woman film studio.
She really is. And it's incredible on just a literal scale of what she's kind of put into the scene. Then we also have the amazing story and the way in which she tells it, but it's also told on 35mm. She's filmed this on 35mm film, so it actually looks very much like the cinema of the time, which is also really important to note. But it's not really that kind of cinema, because instead of it being male projections, it's actually this one female character who is projecting onto the men around her. And it's based on, I think really fascinatingly, Annabella says, a lot of those conversations in the film where, you know, a man might say something like, oh, it's just so hard to find a woman who's beautiful and smart. These are actually based on conversations she's either had or overheard with other men. So these are not...
In the modern day.
In the modern day. These are not just throwbacks to the 1960s and 70s. You know, this is a kind of combative problem that continues. This film is really brilliantly aware of all of that. You know, it's aware of its references and its origins and the kinds of tropes that cinema has, but it's also somehow posited with one foot in the contemporary landscape. And I think that's what's really interesting, is this kind of crossing of time that her film has. It exists in the past, but it also exists in the present. It can't not have those references, but it subverts them so well. It's funny, but actually ultimately it's a tragedy. It's a tragic story of a kind of misguided woman and her search for emotional happiness and her search for emotional happiness from men. There are brilliant lines in this film. There's a line about tampons not being gross and how she thinks that maybe men have never, you know, it's fascinating that so many men have never seen a tampon. And you kind of think, gosh, that's actually true. So many men will never have seen a tampon. I think I audibly clapped in the cinema at that moment. I was so happy to hear someone say that on cinema.
I'm the love witch. I seduce men with my spells, my potions, my eyes, and my body. I love men. I crave the love of a man who's strong and handsome, smart and kind. There's one thing that I don't like about men, and about people in general. It's when people talk and text during a movie. Did you know that when you talk and text during a movie, you're interfering with the movie's energy? It's not attractive. It's anti-attractive. And it makes everyone dislike you, including me. So don't work against the magic. Work with the magic.
The film critic Tara Judah there. Elle and The Love Witch are out in cinemas right now. And that's it for today. Next week, things will be getting pretty creepy.
I've always made movies that function on a conscious and subconscious level. I mean, and sometimes I feel that, you know, that I'm, when I'm writing, I get into areas. I'm not sure why I end up there, but somehow that's where my thought process brings me.
As Kristen Stewart's ghostly new film Personal Shopper hits theatres, I'll sit down with writer and director Olivier Assayas. Today's show was edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and Dea Sissa, and researched by Yolin Goffan. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your audio. The Cinema Show is back next week, and just because it feels fitting, we'll leave you now with Lana Del Rey's latest track, Love. I'm Ben Rylan. Thank you for listening.
It's enough, just don't make me go crazy, crazy, crazy. It's enough just to make me go crazy.